I'm Uncle Monster, and you're listening to Nutty Bites.
I'm Uncle Monster, and you're listening to Nutty Bites.
I'm Uncle Monster, and you're listening to Nutty Bites.
Hi, this is the real Uncle Monster, and you're listening to Nutty Bites.
Imposter!
This episode of Nutty Bites was recorded at 2017's Balticon. We are going to bring you that panel to your listening devices anywhere you want now in 2018 as we get ready for Balticon 2018. So please enjoy. If you ever wanted to know how do I start a podcast, this panel might help you out.
Welcome to Podcasting 101 for Balticon, and we're going to tell you the very basics of getting your podcast off the ground, what you need to do to put things down. Record, edit, post, publish, get it into directories. We're going to cover all of that, but we're going to go as basic as possible so that you get the easiest startup. And then if you want more refinement, you check out other panels that go into specific areas. With us today, we have...
I am Nobilis Reed. My podcast, Nobilis Erotica, has been publishing the best erotic science fiction audio in the known universe, because it's the only one. I started in 2006. The first episode I posted in December 2006 was wrong and bad because you couldn't actually hear anything in it. And so the actual first episode you find in my podcast is in January 2007, because it took me a week to figure out what was wrong.
I am Laura Nicole. I have been on many podcasts over the years. My most recent endeavors were Gypsy in the Attic, and which was an interview format show where I interviewed other authors and self-published authors and podcasters. And then I took that to a low-powered radio station in my area and renamed it Creative Valley. And I'm also an author and audio engineer.
And you also did Stoneburner Case Files as audio.
That's why I said I was a...
All right. Hi, I'm Doc Coleman. I am the current showrunner for the Balticon podcast. Yes, it's still out there. I'm going to get the episodes out real soon, I promise. I have also been a past member of the now-defunct Galley Table, and I had a podcast of my own called The Shrinking Men. I'm a writer. I've just published my first novel, The Perils of Prague, and I've also done voice acting for a number of different productions.
And I'm Nettie Nukchas. I have been contributing to podcasts since 2005, and I started my very own self-run podcast in 2011. That is called Nutty Bites. I have been in audio dramas and doing movie reviews and all of those other things, but I also teach podcasting in the educational world and to nonprofits, and I like to call myself the podcast pusher and podcast mentor because I like getting people podcasting because I think it's a fun thing. And even though there's tons of them out there, we're never going to cover everything that needs to be podcasted about. So I want to help people. Yeah. Yeah. So let's start with the basics of recording, because you need audio, right?
Mm-hmm.
Generally, unless you're a video podcast, but we're going to mostly go on audio here.
Let's just say we'll stick straight to audio because video podcasting has been pretty much completely overtaken by YouTube.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's a whole other podcast.
Right.
I think that could be the Balticon drinking game.
What podcast?
Anytime I say that could be a whole other podcast, take a drink.
Yeah.
So, what are the basics of recording? What do you need?
Something with a microphone and something to store the information on. I have seen people who run their entire podcast off of their phone, do everything that they need to do in the phone. Personally, I like a little more screen real estate, but yeah, that's all you need.
A microphone, you can do it on your laptop, and a basic audio program like Audacity or GarageBand so that you can edit, mild editing.
In addition to having ability to record, ability to edit, you need space to record. and that may change depending on what kind of podcast you're doing. Nathan Lowell does a very successful Talking on My Morning Walk, which is just him, his phone, a microphone, and the neighborhood where he walks around. And you get a lot of noise and cross sounds, but that's part of the podcast. But,
and boots.
And boots.
Apparently.
And boots and the monk pole. But if you want to have a controlled, quiet area, you need to figure out a space that you can record in. You need to tune that space for quietness, which is another podcast. Mm. But you can either do that by trying to soundproof.
Try not to use need for these things, because you don't need.
That's true. You don't need.
Yeah.
But you want to have a space. You want to control the space. How much you need to fight it out depends on your needs for your podcast.
Every podcast is going to have its own personal rules.
Yeah.
You decide, what are my rules? And you adapt to each of those.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, and, go.
It's really all about making sure that you do things well to start off with before you branch out to add an extra layer of advanced techniques. So you want to make sure that you're recording on a regular schedule before you start playing around with, oh, how can I make the audio better? Because that's just going to make you crazy if you're learning too many things at once.
Or say you begin recording using your earbuds microphone, mm-hmm. and that works great at the beginning, but then you want to move up to an actual microphone or a mixer or so forth.
Yeah. The whole question for me for audio quality, which mm-hmm. goes to the space and what kind of microphone right. you have and your vocal technique and all, it affects all aspects, is that good audio quality, the better your audio quality is, the less people notice. The better your content is, the more people will notice. So you want to have, the audio quality needs to be good enough. And I get a lot of pushback from this from other podcasters who say, wow, audio quality is absolutely the most important thing you could possibly do. And it's like, okay, if I put out a podcast that consists of nothing but a 60-cycle hum, but it's absolutely perfectly crisp and clear, nobody is going to listen to it.
Yeah, you definitely want your content to be engaging. So
I think the most important thing that we did not mention about podcasting and what you need to start is having something to say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I can definitely agree with that, and I will amend my own words by saying that it's not so much important to have a good audio recording space as much as a consistent one. As long as you can be heard and it's consistent, people will ignore the buzz. But
there is a podcast that I listen to. Has been going since I think 2005 or 2006, and it's Derek Coward's Comic Book Noise, and most of the time now he records it while driving to work, and you hear the tick-tick of the road noise, the tick-tick of the blinker. Sometimes he yells at another driver and then apologizes, including... every now and then, there is a sniff that he does on purpose because somebody wrote in and complained that he was sniffing too much. So at the end, you're listening to a lot of noise, a lot of comic book noise. if you have something to say and you are passionate, your audio quality can suffer. If you're really hurting people's ears and you don't have anything interesting to say, they're going to tune right out. You could have, as you said, perfectly crisp piss, but you have no content. That's not going to work. Yes?
A comment on just that. Probably 10 years ago in this very thing, they said, there's no way you could ever make money on a podcast. My first thought was, there are thousands of crossroads in this country where the people have built a hall and pay a guy a living. Listen to what he has to say once a week.
So, yep.
Yeah.
How you do it, you know.
Yeah.
Podcasting is not the same as your collection.
We can get to monetizing
content that is what matters.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Absolutely. And I think that again, whole other podcast is monetization, but podcasting has developed because of podcasting. There are now industries that didn't exist before. And, you know, there are pay services out there that podcasters use that didn't exist before.
Yep.
So there's a lot of money in podcasting. Most podcasters are not able to make a living off of their podcasting, but there's a lot of money in podcasting, and there are some podcasters that can definitely make a living off their podcasting. So we've got our podcast. Mm-hmm. We've recorded it. We've got something to say. We've got the audio. What do we do with that audio?
We make it pretty.
Maybe.
So with editing, when you get your first audio editor, it is extremely possible to do too much filter.
On that regard, for the first podcast you do, I want to say, if you're not using Alphonic for your first podcast and at least listen to what that produces, mm-hmm. then you're really missing out.
Right.
Because that will handle a lot of the things that we used to have to sit down and tweak and twiddle and, oh my God, all the work it would take to make something that sounded halfway good.
Yeah.
And now I just send it to there and they handle it for me.
Well, so, you know, that's part of my business now is to clean up the audio. You can only do so much without corrupting the integrity of the voice. If you do too much, you're going to sound like a robot in a tunnel with sewage. It's terrible. It's absolutely terrifying and terrible. So, like we said earlier, if you've got engaging content and you've got a consistent background, even if it's not perfect, your audience will be used to it and it will become white noise and they will focus in on what you're actually saying.
As long as it doesn't get too bad. I mean,
Because
if you've
like,
got a 40 decibel noise bed, you're going to have some trouble.
Right. But that's like a one-off instance, and then you'd have to think about, well, am I going to go and re-record it, or am I going to try to manipulate it a little bit, or just cut it out?
So what are some of the basic things that we do when we edit a podcast file?
Okay.
When we edit a podcast file. Noise cleanup, editing out tangents, and putting in an intro and an outro. I think those are the three major things.
I want to kind of go a little deeper into the kind of audio engineering aspect. There's what I call horizontal editing and vertical editing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So the vertical editing is the tools you're applying to the whole file to make it sound better, such as filtering out, you know, filtering noise, filtering pops and clicks, normalizing, and setting levels.
Yeah.
For the audience, levels are how loud things are, how soft things are. You know, in this recording, I don't want the sniffs or the coughs, so I'll take those out.
Yeah,
but I do want our voices nice and loud.
Right. The sniffs and clicks and pops and mouth noises and ums and ers and all that, that's what I call horizontal editing.
Okay.
You're cutting out a bit and pushing it together again. Any audio editor can do it.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're talking about the amplitude of your waveform.
But when you're talking about, okay, is this loud enough and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I'm finding actually for almost all of the vertical editing, the automated tools for a novice are better than anything that an audio that they could do for themselves.
Right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So there
are a variety of audio tools. You mentioned Afonic, some people like Levelator.
It's good
to have all of these tools in your toolbox.
Right.
And always know you don't just use the tool and then go on. You use the tool and listen to the result.
See if the result
worked.
We need to stop for a second about Levelator. Levelator used to be, across the board, the best thing out there. It's not readily available now.
There's some executables banging around that people pass around.
And
it also doesn't do all the things that Alphonic does now.
True. Alphonic is a much more polished program.
Yeah. And you can process 4 hours of recording a month for free.
Yeah.
Which is usually enough. And if you have an hour-long weekly podcast, that's enough.
And as Laura Nicole was about to say, Reaper.
I use Reaper. I find it to be very user friendly, and you know, you can use the trial version as long as you want. If you do decide to buy it, it's $60 for the license, which
I heard
is
30
super
in the
cheap.
Last panel.
Really?
Yeah, so it might have gone down.
Mm, oh, nice. That would be awesome.
Yeah. It also depends on what kind of license, because they have
I have a small business license.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So,
Yeah.
Reaper also does have a very sweet noise canceling.
They do, and you can build a profile. So one of the things when you're starting out, if you are interested in trying to filter out any background noise, is to make sure you get room tone. It's about 10 seconds of just quiet. And by recording that, you can use some of the tools in most of these programs. I know Audacity has a noise capture, Reaper does. I haven't used the other ones that you've been talking about. But basically, you take that small section and you use whatever tool the program has to say, build a profile off of this. Yeah. Now subtract it from my audio.
Yeah, there's if you're using Reaper or Audacity, there are dozens of YouTube
there's lots of tutorials
on how to do that.
Yeah. But it's really nice to have that kind of tool to make things sound cleaner. Mm-hmm. If you're in a particularly noisy place, though, it can
make things sound.
It
really
can
weird.
Make things sound yeah. really tinny.
Leave the noises in sometimes.
Leave the noises mm-hmm. in sometimes.
Yeah.
But there are lots of tutorials on how to adjust it to make it better. If not perfect.
So one of the things that we didn't mention for editing that I have found has been very helpful, especially for discussion podcasts, where you have multiple people, truncate silence is one of the passes that I do in Audacity. Especially when you're talking, you're doing a roundtable thing and people stop and they think. And this is one of those automatic passes that takes those big gaps out. Mm. And you have to tweak the settings, as Doc said earlier. After you do it, you have to listen to it. Make sure nobody sounds like they're not taking any breaths.
Mm-hmm.
But it can take a podcast that, depending on who you are recording with, it can sound like it can be like a 3-hour file and bring it down to like...
Two and a half, 2:45.
I've been on some podcasts where you're sitting there and you're in the recording and nobody wants to talk over each other, and there's a big gap.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing.
I don't think we have that problem.
No, not this group.
And that goes back to like the tools need to be appropriate to what you're recording.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm recording fiction, I've already read the story beforehand. I'm familiar with the material. I go in and I'm narrating, and if there's a pause there, it's probably one that I put in on purpose.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to use truncate silence. That would be an inappropriate tool for what I'm usually doing.
But in a conversation like the scenario that you were speaking about, where those unusual, little bit prolonged silences can occur, it would definitely help with the pacing of the conversation.
Absolutely.
And for me, that's the kind of thing that I do manually, because sometimes I want to remove that silence altogether. Sometimes I want to leave a little bit of it so that the audience knows that people are thinking about it and understand that this is the answer is a considered answer.
Yeah, with you on that, because sometimes the pacing requires that silence.
So sometimes it's technology and sometimes it's art.
And you also want to think, how much do I want to spend doing that?
Yeah.
Because sometimes you don't have the time to sit there and do that. And I know for myself, especially for discussion podcasts, I'll get too cut happy if I start getting into that. And I'm looking at the waveform and I'm like, I could take that out. And when I set it, I can make sure that nobody's talking too close to each other. You know, it's not too on top. And I think that that's important. Again, know your time. Know what your podcast is supposed to be. You mentioned recording fiction, and there's a little tip that many people will use. So you know the story. You know what you're saying, but you still flub. Make a nice loud noise. So when you're editing, you can come back.
I disagree.
You disagree? Okay, tell me.
I disagree because I know several podcasters who use a clicker or a snap or a mouth noise or something like that to set in order to create a waveform in the file that they claim that they can see in the file, and then you just, they don't have to listen closely to the entire thing. They can just, oh, there's a mistake, go there, fix that. Here's a mistake, go there, fix that. And every single one of those podcasts, I have heard their signal noise in the podcast they published.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So I disagree. I think that when you're editing fiction or something like that, you can expect to spend something on the order of 10 times more time editing it than you did recording it.
Post that. recently. Yeah. I had a fight with somebody about it. But yeah, it's about 10 to 1 from recording to...
Because when I'm editing and I'm like, okay, I'm going to take out that breath because it's a loud breath and it doesn't sound good. I'm going to take out that breath. I envelope it, excise it, push everything back together again, and then scroll back 5 or 6 seconds to hear that thing come through. And if I... I missed the very beginning of that breath, so pull it back a little further and adjust it again. Okay, now it sounds good. It takes a long time to do that level of editing, mm-hmm. and the people who are using the clickers are trying to short-circuit that, and there is no substitute for listening carefully.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. When I do it, and I'm not a huge fiction editor, so that's...
Hi. Hi, that's my job.
Yeah, that's you guys. I don't do a click. I actually say, edit this out. Because I have ADD. And when I'm listening, I can be listening very carefully and I can still miss it. And I know
especially
that I'm the editor.
Especially if you know if you're listening for one thing and something else happens.
I agree with you also. I do not think editing by... visual waveforms is a way to go, really, because everybody's waveform is a little bit different, and so often I'll look at the waveform and how I receive it in my ears is different than how I see it visually.
Yeah.
And when I listen to podcasts that, and I know podcasters, they say, I do all the editing without listening, I just look at the waveforms. Yeah, I can tell.
The note to future nutty.
Yeah.
It says, okay, just take that whole part out. That's a different thing. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about
talking about the click,
the clicks and the snaps.
Okay.
I personally use both. I go ahead and I do two snaps to create an edit mark, but I don't look for that waveform as much as. I listen through everything very carefully.
I still think it's correct.
See, for me, if I'm recording fiction, I just restart from the beginning of like the sentence before so that the tone can be correct. And that's partially because I just don't want to lose the flow.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got
momentum and you've got the tone, stopping to do something else to mark it as an edit as opposed to continuing with the story and with the feel that you've already got going can be very abrasive to the listener because you'll hear that cut and it will be terrible.
Unless you're really good at
For
Podcasting 101, if you make a flub or a mistake while you're recording, go back a sentence or two to redo it because you don't have the editing skills to splice together two different lines and make them sound like they were originally recorded.
It'll just sound.
You'll develop that eventually, but
we've recorded our file, we've edited our file, we've put it through some sort of post processing. Maybe it's all phonic, maybe it's not. Now what do we do with that file? We need to get it to the internet. We need to host.
Nope, you skipped a step.
What did I skip?
Encoding.
Okay, and the encoding. Yes, thank you. Go ahead, tell us.
Okay, so most podcasts are distributed as MP3s. It's a compressed audio format. It takes a file that in a raw audio form might be 500 megs and can break it down to something like 10 or 15 or 20 megs. And since many, many people enjoy podcasts on mobile devices nowadays, you want to be kind to their download plan.
Yes.
You don't want to use any more of their bandwidth than you have to. And this is another discussion I get into with people in podcasting about what, because there's a bit rate associated with MP3s. You can record at various different bit rates, and that's how much compression is applied. And these audio professional guys will go, oh, I can tell the difference between a 193 and a 96 encoded files. Like, good for you. Most of these people are listening on earbuds or their car speakers, and they can't tell the difference.
Yeah. Can you tell the difference when I'm speaking, or can you tell the difference when you're listening to music?
Right.
That's
well.
Big
even, they
thing.
Even say that they can hear them speaking, and it's like it doesn't matter because the equipment that most people are listening on can't reproduce that anyway.
And so, you maybe.
So I recommend for most people, absolute maximum bit rate that anybody should be releasing podcasts at is 96 kbps.
Maximum. Okay.
Maximum.
Okay.
That's for things like audio drama and stuff like that, where you've got like music beds underneath and sound effects and all kinds of stuff going on. If you're doing just a regular old talk podcast, 64 is just fine.
And I disagree, but I've always said, and when I'm working with the radio station that I have worked with, it's the big fight is all of the radio hosts want to release at 256. I said, you're a talk show. You don't need 256.
No way.
And I tell them max 128, min 96.
Okay, that's a matter of degree.
I'm going to go and I'm going to listen more to some 64 because if we can make it better on data plans, that's even better. And hosting and bandwidth.
Hardcore History, which is possibly the most popular podcast in the world, it gets millions of downloads a month, releases at 64.
Good to know.
Because it's just a guy talking into a microphone.
You'll get one. Yes. I'm glad you asked that because there's a lot of clickbaity articles going around right now saying that MP3 is dead and we're abandoning it.
And I call malarkey. So
Apple
would
malarkey.
Love
this is marketing
yes.
because those articles are put out by the people who had the patent on MP3, and now that patent has expired. They want to sell you on a new patented product.
On AAC, basically.
Yeah.
But is it going to be better or different?
We won't know until able to...
For people who are producing spoken word content that is going to be consumed by people in earbuds and car speakers, it's not going to make a difference. And the devices will continue. Your phone will be able to play MP3s for the foreseeable future.
We've been able to
see Apple trying to say, "Oh, we're going to leave out the MP3 encoder to try to get people onto the formats that we control." They might try that.
It's not going to work. It's not going to work.
MP3 is the most versatile format currently.
Playable on every device.
Every device can play it. And now that the patent has expired, and they can't charge for the encoding, things like Audacity won't have to give you their editor and tell you to get the third-party plugin that they don't bundle, because if they bundled it, it couldn't be an open-source program.
Right.
We'll be able to put that in now, which is really great. We've had the ability to do AAC podcasts since 2005. They were called Enhanced Podcasts. And some
what does AAC stand for?
Apple compression something.
No, it's Apple Audio Codec.
There you go. Yeah. Apple Audio Codec.
And
AAC, not ACC.
AAC does give you a lot of neat abilities, but not everybody needs them.
And not all the devices could play them.
Not all the devices could play them, and that limits your audience by making that choice.
Back in the day, back in 2005, 2006, there were some podcasts that were out there, and they would release two feeds. One with the AAC, one...
With the MP3.
With the MP3. And it was neat because you could see the art change. It would have show notes that would pop up at certain times. And it was great if you had an iPod or an Apple device. And if you had a Zune
or Sansa
or an iRiver or, your Android phone or a Pixel, whatever, you couldn't watch it. And if you tried watching it in a browser, it was this tiny. It's a little different now. Yeah. There are, of those podcasts that did that, there are almost none of them doing it still. I think Frog Pants still does it a little bit. I know for Coverville, he still has the AAC, but it's a lot more work for a lot less reward. It is not a 101 way to make a podcast, and it's a good way to manufacture a no if you only put out the AAC. So MP3, here to stay, diehard MP3 fan.
Yep.
It's like, will the MP3 die? Yeah, eventually, but it's going to take years, and the new technology that's going to kill it hasn't come out yet.
Who here can still find a device in their home to play vinyl albums?
Does the radio station count?
MP3 may be the vinyl album of the 21st century, but people can. It's not going away.
It's got more staying power than the cassette, and definitely has outlived the 8-track already. So we're going good. So now we want to hope.
Actually, I'm going to harp on this again, but listen to your podcast after you've edited it. Listen till you get to the end where it stops playing.
Yes.
Not when you stop hearing sound where it stops playing.
Don't fool your audience into thinking there's a bonus track.
Experienced podcasters leave 18 minutes of silence on the end of a podcast. You always want to know where that end is. Listen to it. Encode it. Listen to the encoding, because sometimes the MP3 is a lossy encoding. Sometimes it will change things, and your file won't sound as good. Or you might find out that if you've gone down to 64, maybe that's a little bit too small for this episode, and you need to re-encode it at 96. Do those things first. Then we go to hosting.
So now I promise you, we're getting to hosting. Now you want to host your podcast. You want to get it out on the internet. And we're going to talk about publishing, but where do we put that file? There's lots of options.
If you have a little bit of money, I recommend one of the podcast-specific hosting services like Libsyn or Blueberry. Mm-hmm. If you have zero money whatsoever, use archive.org.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
I agree. There are some that are just a little fee crazy. There are some that I have not had good experiences with, but archive.org is great. You just want to make sure that you are not using any copyrighted material.
Because you can have a copyright on what you've created there.
Right.
But you can't use something that's
so
from
like
someone.
if your copyright
still has to be a Creative Commons copyright. Yeah. You can't put copyright by.
But like
that's actually changed.
Has it? Okay. Yes. Well, see, everything's changing.
Technically, everything is copyrighted, but you're actually releasing it under a Creative Commons license.
Right.
But,
So, like, even if you have a Creative Commons license for your show, you can't use Yellow Submarine as your theme song. That would be copyright infringement.
Yeah, that goes back to creating it in the first place. But I use Libsyn, and the main reason I use Libsyn is not so much for the fact that I can spend $20 a month, and it doesn't matter how many people come download my show, it's only going to cost me $20 a month. If you host it on just a regular file hosting place, if you suddenly are really popular, you could be destroyed because most places charge you by download. A host that is specifically tailored to podcasting charges you by upload.
What you're telling me then is, even though we already have a web hosting service for hosting online fanzines, we cannot assume that would be a place to put a podcast.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you need to check it.
That is just about the most costly mistake you can make.
And I've seen it cripple some podcasts. I use my own server. I already had a server, and I did the investigative process to discover, hey, this server that I have, it includes podcasts because they specifically said podcasting and had special guidelines for hosting podcast files. That was fantastic, and I sleep well at night knowing I'm safe. But it's very important. Just because it says unlimited bandwidth, unlimited downloads, unlimited everything, does not mean that they mean podcasting. And our radio station in Canada, we had one of those services. They knew we were a radio station. They knew we would be podcasting. And they, in our contract, everything was unlimited. And they said, yeah, but come on, we don't really mean, I mean, look at these numbers. You can't really expect this. And it was a constant battle back and forth because we had a contract and we were fighting it until we had nothing. No website, no files, nothing. And
because there's always a clause in the contract that says that the host can say, well, no, we don't want to do this anymore.
Exactly. And so we ended up luckily finding a local company that said, hey, we're going to donate this to you. And we put an ad on the website saying all of our files are being hosted by these people. And they've been wonderful for, thank you, Vagrant Hosting. But even when it says, you know, everything is included, make sure you talk to them about podcasting. Because if you have it in writing that it's podcasting, you're going to be good.
Now, one of the other things I love about Libsyn is that, you know, creating the they give you a podcast page, like a website, and you've had a lot of control about what that looks like. You get, and most importantly to me is, and this goes to something that comes after what we're talking about, but the host, they give you lots of information about who is listening to your podcast. You're not going to get that from archive.org.
No. They're not going to tell you. You'll get no statistics from archive.org.
They will not even tell you how many times it's been downloaded. It's just where it is. And if you plan to grow your podcast, having information about who's listening, where they are, when they're getting it, all that kind of stuff.
If you want advertisers, that's the stuff that they're interested in. Personally, I don't care about that stuff because I find that it's distracting for my process. And there's a lot of complications, but Libsyn is
kind of the gold standard.
Gold standard. Like, if you want to trust statistics and you need that information, I would go with Libsyn because they are the most accurate. And they're not just going to give you, you know, 80 download numbers because they were down and they said, well, sure, 80 people, you know, 80,000 people would have downloaded this anyway. And then your statistics are all messed up. They're going to be honest because they're podcasters.
Did you spell Libsyn?
Libsyn.
Lib.
Yeah.
Libsyn.
So sin like syncing.
It stands for liberated syndication.
Yeah. Thank you. Both Libsyn and Blueberry, which is not spelled the way a blueberry is,
it's one of those vowel droppers.
Yeah, it's a vowel dropper. We're both created by podcasters. Libsyn is tried and true. And has been since the beginning. Blueberry is also awesome. Both of them are responsive.
Yep.
But if it were me, I'd go listen.
And they're like in direct competition with each other. So every time one of them puts a new feature in, the other one catches up. And they keep each other honest. I love Blueberry for the fact that they're...
And they're respectful to each other, which is really neat.
It's a brilliant...
Like, you'll see Rob and Todd... talking in the same threads sometimes and completely respectful of each other. So it's remember.
And I'm assuming they're the creators of both of those.
Rob Walsh is the creator of Libsyn, who actually wrote a book about podcasting years ago called Secrets of the Podcasting Masters.
Todd Cochran that does Blueberry, which is also a plugin that you can use. You don't have to use them for hosting. You can use the plugin on your WordPress, and they're also the Podcast Awards people.
Yeah.
So. Any other things about hosting before we go into publishing?
You pretty much covered it. For me, I went out and specifically searched for a host that would do unlimited bandwidth, unlimited storage, because podcasting files get big when you keep a large archive, and was specifically permissive of podcasts. And I probably pay a little bit more than... other people do because those are kind of premium features, but it works. Yeah.
I pay $20 a month for my podcast, and
I pay $100 a year, and I have multiple sites. So, I am hosted.com, which is not to be confused with IamHost.com, which happens to be the world's most premier porn.
Oh, goody. So Libsyn is really great because it lets you publish. You need to get the file set up with an RSS feed so people can use their phones, iTunes, Downcast, yeah. Stitcher, whatever to get it.
Let's talk a moment about the RSS feed.
Yeah, go right ahead.
So an RSS feed is the core of podcasting. If you're not producing an RSS feed, you don't have a podcast.
You just have audio files.
You have audio files.
On a website.
I've heard people who have YouTube channels to say that they have a podcast.
Yeah.
What the RSS feed is a machine-readable file, a very small machine-readable file that lists what files are available to be downloaded. And your podcatcher, every day, checks those RSS files from all the different things you're subscribed to and says, oh, here's one that I've never downloaded. I'm going to go get that one. And the reason the podcasting is so great is because you're not actually streaming this stuff. You don't have to have connectivity 24/7. It's been stored on your phone, and you can listen to it there. So one of the wonderful things about Libsyn is that they construct that RSS feed for you automatically every time you upload a new show.
In the early days, you used to have to write it, hand-code it, and it was insane. But almost nobody does that now. I can think of like three people that do.
Christiana.
Yeah, and... does not surprise me. And before anyone asks, RSS stands for really simple syndication. Mm-hmm. So, Libsyn, you've got your blog posts. It makes the RSS feed. You're good to go. If you want to have your own website, you can use something like WordPress.com, which is free, or WordPress.org, which can go on your server. There's a bunch of places. A Blogspot, which can... limit your episodes in your RSS feed to 10 episodes, but apparently there are ways around it. We're not going to go into those because I just learned about them last.
And it's kind of not a one-on-one topic.
Yeah, it's not a one-on-one at all.
Yeah.
Other really good ways to publish?
I'm using WordPress, and one of the things I like about WordPress is using the Blueberry plugin, I can do category.
Yes.
Feeds, so that not only can I create one feed, but I can put up one episode with different categories, and it can go into multiple feeds with a single post. So that can be really powerful.
Yeah. I use Libsyn's page to create that, but I have an auto. Another one of those things as far as publishing is concerned that Libsyn does is it has a long list of what are called unpublished destinations, where you can say, okay, I want this podcast to go to my YouTube channel. Here's the connection information. Here is a still image to put up, and it sends it to YouTube. I want it to be announced on Twitter. Here's my Twitter information. You get the login there, and every time I post an image, it's an automatic Twitter thing.
Yep.
It can do Facebook. It can do all the different social media accounts.
Does it do SoundCloud?
No, because they consider SoundCloud a competitor.
Ah, interesting.
So just like you can't have it published to Blueberry.
Okay, yep. No, that's cool. My WordPress does pretty much all of those things, which I love, except for the YouTube video. That's really awesome.
Yeah, they just added that last year.
That's great. Yeah,
and there may be a plugin for that. There's so many plugins for WordPress.
Everybody wants to write one. Yeah. So one of the things about...
One thing I do want to say is don't host your RSS feed on WordPress. At Libsyn, 50% of their tech calls come from people who are hosting their content on Libsyn, but have their RSS feed managed by WordPress.
Okay.
You can have a dedicated podcast host like Libsyn or Blueberry. They will construct an RSS feed, link to it from your WordPress. Don't use the WordPress RSS feed because those break all the time.
Okay.
It may not be breaking on yours if you've got it, but
what I use for my RSS.
Somebody will update up.
Blueberry is making my RSS. It's using the information from WordPress. It's doing the category,
right.
And it makes a Blueberry specific RSS, which is great. Another thing that some people use
they are podcast focused companies.
Yes,
they understand that stuff. WordPress does not care if your RSS feed suddenly won't work.
And one thing that some people will use is they will use FeedBurner. It's no longer supported, but that doesn't mean that it's not that it's broken. And that can be very helpful for people that don't have a lot of money and aren't sure if their hosting and their publishing is going to stay the same, because you can change the RSS feed and migrate and a lot of things. But
what's your typical storage size of one of your podcasts? I'm going to get Libsyn here, and the cheapest rate is only 50 megabytes per month.
If 50 megs, okay. Generally speaking, if you're encoded, this is another reason why you want to encode it at the lowest possible encoding. If you're encoding at 64 kbps, then a minute of audio will be about 1 meg. No, that means you can get about 50 minutes in, which would mean you could have a long monthly podcast or a really short weekly one. That $5 hosting is kind of their trial thing.
Yeah.
You can get into it, learn their system, figure it out. You don't have to spend a lot to get in. Most people who use Libsyn go at the $20 rate, which gives you 200 megs, I think. 250?
Yeah. $20 rates. $400. Is a $15 rate for $250.
Okay. Yeah, I use a $20 rate. I have hit that maximum a grand total of once, and then I just delayed it till the first of the next month, and I was fine.
You're limited to 400 megabytes total, correct?
No, per month. That's how much you can upload
per month.
So you can have the first month 400, and then the next
month another 400, and the next month
and the other stuff stays there.
And all the other stuff stays there. I've got more than 400 episodes on my Libsyn account. Each one of those is on the order of 30 megs, so that's 12 gigabytes, I think, altogether, roughly.
You can put a lot up there. And I don't want to turn this into a Libsyn commercial, and we are running out of time, so I do want to get to podcast directories.
Yes.
Because you've got your podcast, it's out there in the world. How's anybody going to know about it? More than just your own social media and having them subscribe directly to your RSS feed, which, a lot of people will.
You'll get some.
But iTunes is the big elephant in the room.
If you're not on iTunes, you're not serious about it.
About 60% of people get their podcasts through iTunes, and a good portion of those apps that are podcatchers, like Downcast and BeyondPod and so forth, they use the iTunes directory. So you don't have to list separately with them. But there are some other directories that you do list with.
No.
There were.
Well,
there's one directory that has a significant amount of traffic that if you want to grab that last 3%, you can go with Stitcher.
Yep, Stitcher.
Once you've got iTunes and Stitcher, you have very nearly everybody who is going looking for podcasts.
I have a couple others that I always do. TuneIn, which is, it's all about streaming, but I'll tell you, I've had people tell me that they found me through TuneIn and that they only use TuneIn because it was included in their smart TV or it was included in their car or whatever. And those diehard Zune fans, and Microsoft fans, you can get yourself in the Microsoft store and the Microsoft directory, which most people don't even realize is out there. And it's so small. It's one guy that manually puts it in. His name is Rob, and you email Rob. Okay?
Okay. But here's the thing. There are lots and lots of directories out there, podcast directories. All of them are drops in the bucket.
Seriously. Compared, yes.
Once you're on iTunes, that's where you're going to get very nearly all of your... Yeah. And this is from Rob Walsh at Libsyn, who knows an awful lot about podcast statistics. He can tell when somebody is coming through from iTunes compared to other things. Because anybody with an Apple device is getting their podcast from iTunes. The traffic at just looking at like things like Alexa ranks and other things that say how many people are actually visiting those other directories, the number of people going there to look for podcasts is less than 0.1% of the people who go to iTunes looking for podcasts. Yeah. So iTunes, maybe Stitcher if you want to get really, if you're a real completionist, once you've got those two, because here's the thing again, you can, Google Play Music recently started putting podcasts in, you can listen to podcasts through Google Play Music. They've not been making as much of a big deal of it as they should have, because they still I mean, more people have Android devices than iPhones, but we still have two-thirds of podcasts being delivered directly to iPhone, you know, to Apple devices compared to Android, which means that based on the number of actual devices out there, it's a really small minority. Google Play Music ought to be trying to eat iTunes lunch, but...
They're not bothering.
No, they're not really putting a lot of effort into it.
So...
But you can be... But I know for my own podcast, it's all iTunes.
Yeah. You got... No matter what you do, you have to hit iTunes. You can go further. You can do more. I'm going to open this up to questions. I was hoping to have more time for questions. But one thing I do want to say is if you're on Facebook and you want more information, there is a group called Podcast Community. There's a lot of people in it, and it's a lot of noise sometimes. But it's a great resource, and Rob is in there, and Todd is in there, and people who wrote the books on podcasting are in there, and the founders are in there, and new people are in there, and people are constantly coming up with new ways and new things that are happening. And if you say, hey, this thing looks really good, maybe I can use this for podcasting, if you post in there, you'll have people telling you all of the good, all of the bad, and you can get really, really in-depth. So let's open this up for some questions. I did see some hands raised. If they still have questions, Tech?
Yeah, I just wanted to make the point, another great way to get your podcast published is to marry a podcaster. Extremely well for me. Thanks, Nutty.
And the caveat there is marry a good podcaster. There
marry
are
a good
many...
podcaster who loves editing.
Yeah, I don't love editing.
Did you guys talk about FTPs?
Yeah, we didn't. This is 101. We'll get to all that stuff in a further... That's a whole other panel. Take a drink.
Anybody else?
Really? Okay.
Do you have to pay to put things on iTunes?
No.
Yeah.
No. Putting things onto iTunes is completely free. Registering in almost any of these directories that Nobilis says that aren't worth it, completely free.
There are some that are still trying to scam podcasters by telling them that they're going to get a whole bunch of listeners by spending $10 a
month. Don't pay for somebody to do it for you. No. It's a scam. And the cool thing, one of the good things that I think that Apple has done is they started this thing, Podcast Connect, where it's not just that you've submitted it and it's out there. You can go in and you can edit that feed. You can change the information, and you have a little more control, and it's tied to your iTunes account now. It is free. You do not have to pay for that. Don't let anyone charge you for something like that. They're scamming you, and they might steal your feed. Anyone else? All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us. You can find us at...
BalkanPodcast.org or at SwimmingCatStudios.com.
ResonantMoon.com.
Nimlas.org and IMLAS.org.
Nobilis.libsyn.com.
I think Rob needs to pay. That's a joke. Thank you, everyone, for joining us, and this should be up on a podcast soon.
This is Rotonaut Cinema Review.
We've gathered this evening to consider 1936's Revolt of the Zombies.
The rock bottom of the zombies.
We open with the Montezuma's Revenge font from the entire 5200. Which is bizarre since we're not in South America.
While we're looking at plot holes, why did the zombies attacking the trench have guns? They're throwing around lines like,
"It may mean the destruction of the white race."
Yeah, I'm saying that if you happen to be the last person to watch this film, just bury yourself in a landfill.
Rotonaut Cinema Reviews is a Way of the Buffalo Skinner Co. co-production. Goodbye!
And I just want to thank all of the patrons for supporting Netty Bites and getting us two shows a month and making it so that I can go to conventions like this and record panels like this. Hopefully, I put them up more quickly. But unfortunately, fortunately, I had a lot of really interesting show ideas, so I kept putting this in the back burner. But now that I'm getting ready for Balticon, I said, hey, I think people might want to actually hear this. But I want to thank you all for all of that. Another side note, this year will be likely my last year at Balticon for a while. Things have changed in my life, mostly having to do with tech, my normal co-host who would come with me to Balticon. He has another tasking he has to do that same week every year. He one of his responsibilities at work is he is a museum curator for his trade. And so he has to go to a museum conference every year at the same time. So it's going to feasibly be difficult for me. Also, last year, I overworked myself at Balticon so much that I didn't even get to enjoy myself too much. I was on, I think it was 15 panels in 3 days. That was excessive. So this year I'm trying to take it easy. I'm trying to relax. So if you're at Balticon, make sure you say hi and spend some time with me. And you probably won't see too many panels from me. But I'm there to have fun and to see all of you. So make sure you say hello. There will not be a Nutty Bites live episode this year, simply because I just felt like it was kind of... if people were coming to the panel, they already knew what Nutty Bites was. And people that didn't know what Nutty Bites was weren't really coming to the panels. And I found that the more successful panels were the panels that were on specific topics. Last year, my favorite panel was the Red Like Roses, which I published last year as soon as we came back. So make sure you go listen to that, where we talked about Ruby. And that was one of my favorite panels. And I said, you know what? These Nutty Bites Live, where I pit authors against each other, it's not so much fun anymore as it was in the beginning for me personally. And I wanted more joy, for instance, that came out of that Red Like Roses panel. So I'm trying to focus more on that. The other thing is if I'm not going to Balticon next year, I do want to go to another convention. So if you know of a cool convention that is podcaster friendly, not too huge, you know, there's no way I'm going to be able to get on panels at Comic-Con, but and feasible for somebody in the northeast-ish area. I don't know. I'm in Ontario, but I can travel. Please let me know. One of the cons we are thinking about is Mysticon, so that might be a possibility. But please let us know if you've got some suggestions that you think would be really good for us to go to, because we really do want to expand our con atmosphere, and we want to check out some of these other middle ground cons, you know, cons that are more than just one vendor room with no panels, and but not quite Dragon Con explosion. So please let us know, and we would love to figure out if we can come to that con. But thank you specifically to Jason of the Talk Nerdy to Me podcast, to Dave of the upcoming Nerd podcast that you will hear about. We're actually going to, we made an arrangement with Dave because he is a patron, because he is a Big Daddy patron. Jason, Dave, and Aaron Jackson, by the way, are our Big Daddy patrons. I'd love to have a Big Mommy patron, or you could be a daddy, whatever you want. So because Dave is a high level patron, and because he's cool and all that jazz, and I would probably do this for most people, his first episode will be dropping on this feed this summer. So when his podcast comes out, you will actually hear the first episode. And that will just be a little bonus. That won't be our regular episode. But thank you, Dave. Thank you, Aaron Jackson, who is our QC guy. And I'm pretty sure my last episode, there are some A-bombs that got dropped, and I tried listening for them. I did not hear them. Hopefully Aaron will let me know when he hears them, and hopefully too many people aren't upset about it. Thank you to Susanna, Andy Luke. You can find his writings and just go to Amazon. Shane Poole of the Red Dwarf podcast, Beth, the Radical Geek, Steve, Rich the TT, who just sent in feedback, and I am so happy to have gotten your feedback. Rich, you're all sorts of awesome sauce. I love having conversations with Rich when he sends back his feedback, but they're really long, so I'm not going to read them on air. But I will say that he did let us know that the video game for the Alien franchise that we were all trying to think of is Alien Isolation. And apparently it is a frightening game that you cannot play in the dark. So I think we got to go check that out. Thank you to Dagny. Thank you to Mike, Ken, Lynette of the Bicast, Aurora Lee. Go check her out on Patreon. Susan, Melissa A. Bartell, the Bathtub Mermaid. Check her out. I think she put out an episode this month. That was pretty awesome. Thank you to Kinsey, Ian of the Web of Queer, Harold, Jen, Patrick Scafito, also an author. Go look him up on Amazon. And often, Nick.
Nutty Bites is produced by Nimlas Studios under a Creative Commons Attribution No Commercial Non-Derivatives 3.0 International License. That means you can't change it without my permission. You can share it and send it to your friends. Just link back to me, my site, and everything. We live at nimlas.org, which has links to everything social media, including facebook.com/group/nuttybites and patreon.com/nukejoss, or call 347-NUTTY42.